There's a lot of intention on our part that we keep this a living thing and don't make the structure more important than the people.
Hey, pals. Welcome to Found Family. It's a podcast celebrating the creative community we make in our actual lives and providing tips on how you can do the same. I'm your host, Mary B. Seyfried, and I'm a New York City-based writer, relationship coach, and merch maker obsessed with all things hospitality, spirituality, culture, and relationship building. If you like what you hear, follow, rate, and review us wherever you're listening so you don't miss anything, and bonus, you help future listeners find us as well. Today's episode is the story of a 40-year-old intentional community in San Francisco, as told by a self-professed granny queer who's seen the LGBTQ Christian scene evolve since she came out in her 30s. Lynn Malone, she/her, is a member of the Church of the Sojourners, an intentional Christian community in San Francisco, California. She has spoken at LGBTQ Christian conferences such as Q Christian Fellowship, Revoice, and E3. And she's presented workshops at children's ministry conferences on how to make churches more welcoming for LGBTQ youth and families. She also serves on the QCF EDI advisory. She is the queer mom of a grown son from a former mixed orientation marriage. And after retiring from a career as a Montessori teacher, she currently works for Catholic Charities in homelessness prevention. In this episode, you'll hear Lynn and I discuss creating inclusive, empowering spaces for diverse beliefs, convictions, and experiences, tips for keeping your community from veering into cult territory, how to structure a flexible community that works for its people, and the importance of having non-negotiable and negotiable values and knowing what yours are. It is always a treat to hear from queer elders, so let's go ahead and dive on in. Hello, Lynn, and welcome to Found Family. I'm so excited to have you here with us all the way from San Francisco. Super delighted to hear more about your intentional community and more about your life there.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Mary B. I always love talking about my community.
So before we dive into chatting about the intentional community that you're part of, you and I met at the QCF conference, which is the Queer Christian Fellowship Conference. I'm a baby queer, so I'm new, very new to this whole world. But I understand that it's evolved quite a bit over the years, as has the overall LGBTQ plus Christian scene. And I'm just kind of curious if you would tell us what your experience has been like.
Sure. Well, I'm a granny queer, so
yay!
I've been queer for 60 plus years, probably, although I didn't come out until I was in my 30s. I was a late bloomer. And, you know, growing up in the 60s and 70s, there just weren't a lot of lesbian role models that, you know, were taken seriously as opposed to jokes or stereotypes or warning examples in scary movies. So I had been married to a man for 10 years and finally figured out that I was actually attracted to women. And long story short, we stayed married for another 15 years. For a lot of lesbians in my generation, you figure out you're queer by falling in love with someone. But that didn't happen to me, probably because I'm also on the asexual spectrum. So it wasn't any one person that was, well, unless you count Whitney Houston, but celebrity crushes aside, there wasn't a lot of evidence. So when our marriage ended for a different reason, I decided to be out and queer and did all the baby queer rainbow things. But I was in my late 40s at the time, so it was looked a little different. And I had a teenage son. But a friend of mine from InterVarsity, actually, I had been in InterVarsity in college, and a friend of mine from InterVarsity posted a prayer on National Coming Out Day that year. And it was from the Gay Christian Network. And I was like, Gay Christian Network? There's like a whole network of us. I knew a few Episcopalian gay people, but other than that, not a lot. So I got involved in a local Bible study, a GCN Bible study in the Baltimore, DC area, and met lots of great people. And then that was when GCN was run by Justin Lee. And a few years later, fast forward, the name of the organization changed from GCN to QCF. And at that time, they were actually involving a lot of different kinds of diversity. GCN had pretty much been a white cis male bastion. There was some diversity there, but the leadership, et cetera. So Q intentionally tried to diversify quite a bit. And one of the ways they did that was to create a Side B advisory group. And I was part of that. And so I've been involved in QCF ever since its inception. And it's been a great community for me, for building connections. And particularly, I think it's really important that people who, you know, carry some minoritized identity both gather together with others like them and cross barriers. And I think QCF is a great place to do both of those things. And then, you know, a few years into Q, Revoice was born. And that's a strictly Side B conference. So it's much more, you know, more like us and less crossing barriers, but it's also more available to people who are on the more conservative end theologically in a lot of different ways. So The fact that both Q and Revoice exist is great because I get to go to both and they're very different, but they're both parts of the queer Christian family.
Yeah. I love that we live in a time where both can exist. I'm grateful to be coming into this world in a time when there is such diversity and places for people of different convictions can feel extra seen and held. I would imagine that there's some challenges within just having gone to the QCF conference, there's some challenges in maintaining that space where Side A folks, Side B folks, you know, can commingle. Just because my impression is that there's a decent number of people who've had not great experiences with like more forced celibacy situations. So I don't know. I would imagine there's definitely some difficulties in creating that space for both experiences. I don't know if that's your impression as well.
Oh, absolutely. Q tries to keep the big tent, and that means getting people from all over the theological spectrum, all over the conviction spectrum about same-sex sexual relations, political differences, you know, Israel-Palestine fights break out sometimes at Q over, you know, who we're supporting at any given time, things like that. But I think that Q is a place that values diversity over safety, that when you go in there, you know you're going to be around people who aren't like you and maybe around people who don't like you. There are people who have been hurt by non-affirming theology, and there have been people who have been hurt by overly aggressive mama bears who think that, you know, being Side B is evil. So it's people can get their toes stepped on both ways.
Thank you for bringing that up, that Side B folks definitely get their share of not awesome assumptions about Side B folks like being repressed. But I can imagine that would potentially create some tension and would necessitate quite a bit of intentionality and care and all sorts of stuff when trying to create a space for such a wide range of people, but also wanting to, I guess, not let us be divided because of convictions when a lot of the straight church is not necessarily the biggest fan of us anyways, and being divided only helps that. We're stronger when we can figure out how to hold some of those tensions across many communities, you know, trying to figure out how to hold the tension of our differences while focusing on like, hey, we have this really important thing in common, and that's ultimately what's bringing us together here. So can we figure out how to healthily disagree about the other things that are also important?
Yeah, my friend Christian Komarnicki runs a program that has dialogues between Side A and Side B people. And she talks more about having a brave space, a well-intentioned brave space where you know that there's a little bit of risk. It's not completely safe, but you're willing to be a little bit vulnerable at least in order to build connections across differences. And I think that's really important. And I think to some extent, Q has difficulties creating safe space, but they're definitely a place for brave space.
Speaking about community and differences and similarities and all of that, we'll segue our ways into talking about the intentional community that you're part of in San Francisco. And I would love for you to give the people a story of the community that you're part of.
It's a long story. The community's been around for almost 40 years.
Wow.
So back in the 1980s, a group of folks from Inner Varsity at UC Santa Cruz were in a seniors group, and they were looking for options for life after graduation. And four of the women decided to move up to San Francisco to work with a couple of Baptist missionary families who were serving the refugee population, mostly Central American at that time, in the Mission neighborhood. And they ran a preschool program and a law clinic. And so four of those women that I went to college with moved up to San Francisco and joined these two families. And at first they lived apart, but after a year, one of the women left, another one came in. Those four women and these two families moved into a big house together, and they started a church. And it was a live together church from the beginning. And that's what we still are. Over the decades, we bought a few more houses, which you couldn't do in San Francisco today. But back in the 80s and early 90s, this was still a very affordable neighborhood, for good or for ill. And so we now own four houses within walking distance of each other. Our community is made up of what we call covenant members, who are basically lifetime members and who share economically as well as living together, share our calendars, pretty much share our whole lives. It's somewhere in between a monastery and a hippie house, somewhere in between a house church and a group house, except we have multiple houses. So we have seven covenant members currently. It's a very small church. And then one of the families has two children. Well, actually, a lot of us have children, but most of them are either grown or shared custody. We have two full-time kids and seven full-time adults. And then we also have several other people who are in various other stages of membership. So when you first come into the community, you become an apprentice. You spend a year exploring the life and you aren't kind of all in yet. We take apprentices only in groups. You can't be a single apprentice because part of our experience is living together and sharing our money. And so if you don't have anybody else to share with, then that doesn't work very well. Or sharing our calendars, sharing our commitments, things like that. So a group of apprentices comes in. And most of us have outside jobs. Some people are either full-time caregivers or are on disability or other things like that. So they don't have full-time jobs. Well, most of us actually have three-quarter time jobs.
Okay.
Because we consider our community life sort of a part-time job in itself.
Okay.
So we have membership. You come in as an apprentice. And then after you've been here a year or two, you get more involved, become a practicing member, and then you get more involved and become what we call a novice member, and then become more involved and eventually become a covenant member. And our calendar builds our life together. So on Sundays, we meet at 4:30 in the afternoon for worship and have a meal together as part of our worship service. So we eat dinner together on Sundays. We have three households. So groups of single and married people living together, and each household has dinner together on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday nights. And each household also has daily morning prayer. Then on Tuesday nights and Friday nights, we also have community meetings of one kind or another, Bible study or discernment meetings or business meetings or just what we call sojo together, just hangouts sometimes. Or we have special events like we go to a concert together, etc. So that's happening Tuesdays and Fridays. On Wednesday, it's date night or family night or whatever. So we don't have a meeting on Wednesdays. Thursday nights, we often get together one-on-one with other members of the community just because, you know, we're groups a lot, but it's good to have just one-on-one conversations as well. And then often on Saturdays, we have other kinds of church events. Like once a month we have work days where, you know, since we own these houses, we have to do all the upkeep. So we work in the yard, we, you know, do painting, we fix things, we take things to the dump, et cetera, sort of once a month. And then on the day that we have work day or donut day, as the kids say, because we always have donuts before we start work day. That night we have either guys' night or women's night. And that started when there were a lot of little kids in the community so that, you know, they could divide up the family time a little bit and still get a grown-up's night out. Yeah. So we often have things every day of the week, which is not the way a lot of intentional communities run things, but that's what works for us.
Talk to me a little bit about how you came to be involved with it.
So I knew the community when it started because I went to, I was in this InterVarsity seniors group with the women who moved up from Santa Cruz. And so at the time I was married and Catholic and was not interested in joining a Baptist inner city ministry. Actually at the time, did I say I was married? I wasn't married yet, okay. But I was engaged to the guy I was going to eventually get married to. Okay. But my graduation year, I joined the Jesuit Volunteer Corps. And spent a year in Jersey City, actually.
Okay.
Went to a lot of parties in Manhattan. But that was a long time ago. So the year they came up to start the community, I went to Jersey City. And then I came back and got married. And I knew about the community, was friends with those people. And one summer even worked in their summer program. There was a literacy and sort of a combination of tutoring and vacation Bible school thing going on. We did basically a book study of Voyage of the Dawn Treader and painted a mural on the garage and things like that. Anyway, so I had volunteered with the community, so I knew about it all the way along. By that time I was married, my husband wasn't interested in living in community. Well, we always had housemates, but nothing official. And then we moved to the DC area for 25 years. And when that marriage was ending, I was in this GCN Bible study, and the Bible study picked a book to read together by a guy named Tim Otto called Oriented to Faith. And Tim's book talks about his experience in this community. And I picked up the book and went, oh, I know these people. And it happened to be the year that my son was graduating from college and leaving the Baltimore area. And I had always wanted to move back to California. So I said, well, maybe I can go there. And so I applied to the apprenticeship and they said, that's great. We'd love to have you, but we're waiting for other, you can't come by yourself. You have to have companions. So I was praying for a second application to come in for the apprenticeship. Unbeknownst to me, my therapist was praying for a third person because she thought relationally coming into a new space and just kind of with one-on-one, that might be a bit much for me because, you know, I have personal challenges. Yeah. So we got a third person. And so I've teased that person ever since that she's the answer to my therapist's prayers. But so I moved out and joined the community as an apprentice. And that was 8 years ago.
Okay. So 8 years, that's a solid amount of time. So talk to me about how long it kind of took you to move through, I don't want to say move through the ranks, move through the tiers, move through the, I don't know what language.
Discern my progress into membership.
There it is. There I knew you there go. Would be some sort of very intentional language around the process.
We talk a lot about discernment and we do a lot of group discernment. We have lots okay. of meetings. Yeah. So for me, I came out pretty much, I knew about the values of the community. I knew the people, some of the people in the community. I knew that this was sort of definitely for me. So I came out okay. intending to go straight through.
Okay.
Most people don't do that. So during your apprentice year, you learn a lot about the values of the community. And we do readings together. We do Bibles together, Bible studies together. We talk about money a lot. My apprentice year, we had a guy who was working in tech and another person who was a preschool teacher. And then I was a full-time Montessori teacher and administrator. Mm-hmm. So our three income levels were very different.
Yeah.
But one of the values of our community is that we all live at the same level. So if we make extra money, it just goes into the common pot.
Wow. Okay.
So a lot of our community time that year was spent figuring out how to give away John's money. We actually had to make a rule that we couldn't talk about money every time we met because it just became like a lot. But we had a lot of fun giving away money that year.
Yeah.
And it wasn't all his money. It's partly our money. And right. we're encouraged to think about this as being, you know, God's money. I mean, that's what we call anything over our tithe is our God money.
Right.
So I had already come into the community with a fairly well-established set of values from InterVarsity, from being at UC Santa Cruz. My first experience in community was actually when I was a college student. I lived in a community house run by a Christian ministry, the Resource Center for Nonviolence. And so the issues of social justice and trying to live a holistic Christian life had been part of my value set, my whole adult life. Mm-hmm. And since those are the same values that we have here, it was a good fit from the get-go. So I was an apprentice for a year, and then I was a practicing member for a year. And during your practicing member year, you go and visit other communities because we don't want people to feel like this is their only option.
Right.
So we're part of a couple of networks of communities. One is Shalom Mission Community Network, and that's also part of the Nurturing Communities Network. And so we visit with these other communities and support these other communities in a lot of different ways. So, and then we're part of the Pacific Northwest Community Network. And so on my practicing member year, I went to visit a community called Church of the Servant King in Portland that we have close ties with. And then another thing we do practicing member year is put together a change proposal. It's like, because you come in, it's like, why are you doing that way? And wouldn't it be better if you did it this way?
Mm.
But they have you wait a couple years. So you know what, you've been through the whole calendar year for a while. And you can put forward a change proposal. It's not guaranteed to go through. And I don't even remember what mine was. But for example, one year, one of the more effective ones is that they shifted from having every Thanksgiving as a community holiday to alternating years between Thanksgiving together and Thanksgiving away. So people could go visit their biological families or, you know, do whatever else on Thanksgiving. So that was somebody's change proposal, something like that.
Yeah.
Things that affect our whole life together. Okay. And then your novice year, you basically go through this sort of set of questions. Our covenant is a group of statements, you know, not only statement of beliefs, but statement of practices that we're going to, one of them, for example, is that our church is the main the main organizing principle of our lives. Mm-hmm. That is, our community comes first. That becomes an issue for people with strong biological family ties or chosen family ties. And there has to be a balance. So part of our calendar, for example, is that we're expected to be here for Thanksgiving together and then expected to be here for Easter and expected to be here for other, you know, major holidays. We do a funny thing at the 4th of July called Yahweh's Kingship, where, you know, we celebrate our alternative citizenship rather than the so-called independence of the U.S.
Right.
And we're expected to make those a priority. So, you know, if your family wants to go on a trip on the 4th of July, you say, sorry, I'm booked. Can we do it during our summer break? Mm-hmm. And Christmas is a break time for us. So I don't know a lot of churches that just take weeks off, but we do.
Especially for Christmas, right? Because that's like a big visitor time. Yeah.
Right. So, so everybody has the option of going other places over Christmas, but our Christmas season celebration is Epiphany. So we all come back and that's when we exchange gifts. We have a big party. We organize our lives around what makes sense for the community as well as what makes sense for us. And that means we don't take jobs that involve a lot of travel. It means that we don't take jobs that involve nights and weekends. It means that we don't, you know, make vacation plans without consulting with our housemates and, if we're covenant members, with the rest of the community. It means that we have to ask our bosses for time off for retreats a lot more often than most people. You're going on retreat again? Well, yeah, we do that. We, as a novice member, we go through the covenant and look at all the commitments and see both theological and practical and see, is this really something that I'm being called to by God? Is this something that I feel is going to help me thrive, but also am I willing to do what it takes to help the community thrive?
Yeah.
And so then at the end of your novice year, you have a covenanting ceremony. And every year, just the covenant members go away on retreat together. So we have an all-church retreat and we have a covenant members retreat. And then depending on what year of progress you're in, you might have like an apprentice retreat or a practicing retreat or something like that. So at your covenant retreat, at our covenant retreat, we all read through the covenant together and recommit to it. And then we have a big feast. We just kind of hang out together. And then you're in. And we say, as long as God allows. So with expectation that you don't leave the community unless it's clear that God is calling you elsewhere. And that is a process of community discernment, that people don't just move. They go through a discernment process with the rest of the communities. Are you being called to this? Are there other options? Are there, you know, how can we support you best here or moving on to your next thing?
One thing that I was noticing as you were talking through the different stages of discernment towards covenant is, and also just talking about, you know, your shared life together, is there is a fair amount of, like, while it is very clearly like this is your community and the community comes first and all of that, there is a decent amount of like porousness. In the sense that, like, you're not all your only relationships, right? You have your friendships and your colleagues, I would imagine, at your jobs and your biological family in some cases and all of that. So that is a good sign, I think. So it's not so, like, monasterial or, like, you know, culty by any means, because there is that that porousness and this language about as long as God allows. And so there is kind of that built-in flexibility that this isn't necessarily a till death do we part covenant. It's a we're going to continually make room for God to move us in other directions if that's what God wants. And so it's not like a, I don't know, you're in and nothing you can do about it. But you know what I mean? There's a lot of, like, I can imagine that there would be some like growing pains in establishing this process and kind of figuring out like, okay, no, it's a good idea to like have an opportunity for someone to bring forth a change proposal because outside perspectives are really good and really healthy and they can see things that we don't. And so I was hearing all sorts of stuff along the way of, you know, I don't know how much of this structure was in place when they first started the community, but I would imagine that a lot of this developed over the 40 years of this community's existence because, you know, there was a lot of trial and error and a lot of like people coming in and saying, oh, well, why are you doing things this way? Or, you know, like, or just kind of realizing, oh, maybe we need to allow for this kind of circumstance. And maybe we need to like have these kinds of conversations and that kind of thing. So as, you know, there is that evolution and that allowance for evolution that I think is very important in community, especially in a type of community that, while you said you have connections with other intentional communities, I wouldn't imagine there's like that much of a model for what you're doing. And I mean, it sounds like you're kind of, they were like pulling from various types of intentional communities and various ways of doing community to kind of make what you have.
Sure. I mean, at first, when the four Santa Cruz women moved up to work with the Baptist missionaries, there was no intention that this was any kind of long-term thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't until several years later when a new pastor from another intentional community moved into Church of the Sojourners. His name was John Alexander, and John and Judy Alexander were very formative in sort of developing the structures and developing the ethics and the practices. John actually wrote a book called Being Church.
Okay.
And sort of laid out the principles that we were going to be working toward. And it's always a matter of working toward. It's by no means do we think we have it right or the only way to do things. And one of the things that we do, as far as funny you mentioned that cult issue, because we have a running joke about a cult meter. You know, and when we start like use the word we too often or whatever, we're like, cult meter. But one of the things that we do on a regular basis is every 2 years we have what we call a visitation from members of other communities who come in and spend the weekend with us and say, how are things going here? And how are you doing? All I mean, it's hard to have a cult without a cult leader. And we don't. We don't. So, we don't have a full-time pastor. We don't have any one particular leader.
Okay.
We have a preaching teaching team, two-thirds of which are queer, and including myself. And Tim Otto is also on there. So,
well, fun.
Yeah. So there are a lot of there is a lot of permeability, and there's a lot of intention on our part that we. We keep this a living thing and don't make the structure more important than the people.
That's huge. You know, you mentioned the values of the community. And I think that's, you know, a big part of like what helps a community function and helps people know like, oh, this is for me, this is not for me, as well as the like spiritual discernment process as well, while also acknowledging like, you know, what we were talking about in the beginning with this like thing in community where there's these shared values and also making room for difference. And so I'm just kind of curious maybe how, if that was something that you wrestled with through the discernment process, or maybe if you can share like how your community thinks about like, what are some areas of difference that are like, that work with the community, and some where it's like, no, these are the shared these are the baseline shared values, and that's like really, really important. And if you're like outside of that, that's not, then this isn't like a good fit. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Good.
So let's talk about, I'll give you four real quick examples. So some of the biggest issues are faith, food, sex, and money.
Yeah.
So as far as faith goes, we've had people who would say, we'd love to live with you, but I don't really call myself a Christian. I'm not interested in studying the Bible. That's a non-negotiable for us. We are a church. We are a Christian church. We are a Bible study loving, theology debating, focus on our spiritual life church. So like my son, for example, would have loved to stay and live with us, but he's not a Christian. And he's like, nope, I can't participate in that. So that's a non-negotiable. I think any community needs to know what their non-negotiables are.
Yes.
And what their negotiables are. The other three that I'm going to talk about are all negotiable. So, for example, food. Of course, vegetarian is a big issue among us. Some of us are vegetarian or vegan. Some of us are not. What does that do when you have so many group meals?
Yeah.
Like, does that mean we do all vegetarian all the time? Do we do all vegetarian only with our big group meals? And where we've landed at different places over time.
Yeah.
Currently, our Friday and Sunday dinners are vegetarian and vegan if our vegans are in residence. But our household meals are not necessarily vegetarian, depending on which household you're in and who's cooking. Because when different people cook every night, you know, different things happen. Okay. So that's another thing that gets discussed and comes up over and again. Well, is it time to shift to all vegetarian household meals? Which household, you know, is going to be vegan? Things like that. Oh, and, you know, other dietary needs like gluten-free or cilantro-averse, things like that.
Sure. In the Mission District, I would imagine there's an abundance of cilantro.
And I'm one of those poor genetic souls who is disadvantaged and feels like cilantro tastes like soap. So, So anyway, cilantro on the side has become a thing.
Yeah.
And then as far as money goes, we have both communal financial commitments and personal discretionary funds. And over time, those amounts have shifted. And often there are discernment meetings about should a certain trip, for example, be you know, off books, discretionary fund, or is the church going to fund it, or can it come out of a person's savings, or so figuring out exactly some financial details, how to deal with the cars, how to deal with upkeep. We have to have some flexibility, and things, you know, those things cause arguments, but it's important to be able to argue well. And we've actually had fewer conflicts over money than I might have expected coming in. So that's cool. But we also operate on the honor system. We don't do personal budget audits or anything like that. So, you know, there is some flexibility. Nobody's checking my checking account to see if I'm actually tithing the proper amount, right?
Sure. There's no cult leader to say, are you giving me enough money?
No. And our bookkeeper is like the sweetest person in the community. So she's gonna nag us.
Yeah.
And then sex has been, obviously, as it always is when you've got human beings, huge issues. We have recently moved from being a non-affirming church to a what we call a third way church, although that can mean a lot of different things to different people. What it means for us is that there are people in the covenant, you know, among the covenant members, there are people who are both what we call side A or side B. There are people who, you know, might be choosing celibacy for themselves, but are affirming of same-sex relationships for other people. We recently had one of our members move out because the woman she married had been with us in community for a while, but was feeling a need to be closer to her biological family. But the fact that, you know, that they were still among us, even as a same-sex married couple, had been a matter of discussion for a long time. So, yeah, I'm a Revoice chapter leader. So I'm very definitely side B and choose celibacy for myself. And then there are other people who are very prominent, like Tim speaks at the Reformation Project and is very prominently side A. And we're both equally respected, equally valued perspectives in the community.
Yes. Prior to being a third way church, you were a non-affirming church, is what you said. Yes.
With gay members.
Yeah. Gay members who were side A and side B in the non-affirming.
Right.
Okay. I think it's really beautiful, though, that there is that commitment to community, like, that allows for, even when, you know, the church was non-affirming, allows for room for people who are on all sides of the theological spectrum in regards to sex and sexuality. And it, to me, points to that, like, people over structure kind of value that you spoke to earlier. And that for people who, wherever you fall theologically, that there's room for discussion. There's room for the argument. There's that shared commitment to one another that says, hey, this is maybe difficult and this is uncomfortable. And, you know, there's maybe a lot of feelings here, but, like, we are first and foremost, like, committed to each other through Jesus. And so we're gonna figure it out. And having that flexibility to move to being a third way church, I think, kind of speaks to the strength of that commitment and that bond that kind of supersedes some of the things that can get in the way of being that kind of space and being that kind of community, where it's like, well, we're going to value this particular theology over these human people who we're called to love.
And it's not just about gay sex. We've had lots of debates about whether or not to let unmarried straight couples share a room when they come to visit. Because one of our, you know, I guess if you call it a ministry, one of our practices is hospitality. All of our houses have vacant rooms so that we can have guests constantly. And on our weekly schedule, we have the list of who's coming this week or who's coming this month. And we have traditionally not let unmarried couples share rooms. So, you know, they can have rooms in the same house or just for convenience. But and that kind of discussion, that is still controversial among us. There are people who feel that it's about commitment and covenant, and if these are long-term people, the marriage ceremony isn't as important. And there are other people who say that, you know, as part of our Christian ethics, marriage is important enough that we need to, you know, keep drawing that line.
Mm-hmm. I think that in a healthy church and any healthy community, right, it's giving room for working out this kind of stuff and negotiating this kind of stuff, rather than, like, I don't know, expecting to arrive and this is what's going to work for all times, always, with all of the people who are here, since your community is, you know, somewhat fluid. And, you know, I think, like, yeah, there kind of has to be that flexibility and that, like, discussion and that negotiation and that expectation that things are going to change, or certain things might not change, certain things might change, but that's, like, that's the thing, right? That's the relationship thing. That's how it goes with human beings, trying to work out how to live together.
And some of us have lived together a very long time. I mean, our longest running, like, Tim's our longest running member, and he's been here 32 years.
Wow.
And we have another woman who's been here for more than 25. Wow. And then other people have been here for 15, 18. I'm at 8 years. I'm one of the new kids.
Yeah.
And we only have, we have one practicing member right now. She's actually the new kid.
Okay.
No, I take it back. We have two practicing members.
Okay.
And we have a couple of guest members who are living with us as well.
The guest members are people from other communities?
Well, guest members can be a lot of different things. At this point, we just have one guest member. He's living with us because he usually lives with his mom, who's elderly, but their house is undergoing renovation.
Okay.
So he did the apprenticeship many years ago, but then moved back to take care of his mom.
Gotcha.
And here in San Francisco, and we've been his church the whole time, but he's been living with his mom for the last 10 years or so. But this year he's living with us. So he's a guest member. That's an example. Sometimes we have another guest member who's not currently here. He's in West Virginia because he splits his time half and half between San Francisco and Virginia, because that's where his biological family is. And he goes back and forth a lot.
Gotcha.
So they're people who are definitely part of our church, but are not in the sort of progressive walk toward covenant membership. They've stopped at a certain point because of their own life circumstances.
You know, Lynn, as we're kind of wrapping up, this podcast is all about celebrating the communities we create in our actual lives. So I would love for you to share, you know, we've talked a lot about different things that are great about your community, different things that are challenging, but just what is one thing that you adore about your community?
Besides not having to cook every night?
That's real. That's so real.
I adore our quirky celebrations, like our celebration of Yahweh's kingship, like our Easter celebration. We get up and go to sunrise at the top of a hill and look out over San Francisco Bay, and then come back and, you know, have a potluck brunch and hang out in the backyard around the fire pit. I love our Stations of the Cross, which two people organize every year, and it's done as a sort of procession through our houses and backyard, and they do art and music, and it's different every year, and it's creative and deeply contemplative. And yeah, I think I love our dance parties. One of our houses has a garage that it has a garage door, but it's really kind of a living room. And so we open the garage door and have a dance party in the garage and on the street for people's birthdays. Our decade parties, when somebody turns 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 70, we do an all weekend bash where we surprise them with stuff, and, you know, we've flown in their best friend from childhood, or we have balloon soccer games where, you know, it's just like all kinds of make a big deal out of it because the kingdom of God is a party and it should be reflected in our life together. So that's one thing I adore about our community.
It seems like there's a healthy, it seems like there's a healthy amount of celebration involved in being part of this community. And I think that's really lovely. Especially sometimes, I don't know if you feel this way, but sometimes Christians can get a little over earnest about things and things can be very serious all the time. So making sure there's, you know, or having that culture of celebration, I think is a very healthy thing. And so I love that that's such a big part of your life with your people. Lynn, it's been so, so lovely talking to you. My last question for you is, how can we support you? This is typically, you know, where guests who have like books or whatever that they're trying to sell would talk about that. But feel free to interpret the question however you would like. How can we support you?
Well, if you know anybody who would like to do the apprenticeship with our community, the deadline for that is coming up. The application process is like applying to any other kind of nonprofit service year, things like that. And if they're interested, they can go to churchofthesojourners.org and check out the apprenticeship. And then my next project is actually going to take me away from my community for a little bit. I'm going on a Gaza Solidarity Peace Pilgrimage in Philadelphia during Holy Week.
Okay.
And if people would like to pray for that, it's sponsored by Red Letter Christians.
Okay.
And you can look up hashtag Gaza Peace Pilgrimage or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And that would be a great thing to support.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that. And all of that information will be in the episode description. So it's nice and easy for people to find if they're interested in learning more about your community or about the pilgrimage or anything like that. Lynn, thank you so much for making the time. Thank you so much for being here. It's so lovely to hear, learn more about you and hear about your community.
Thanks, Mary B. As I said, I always love talking about Sojourners. It's my home and it's my family, and I think it's a great thing.
I love that. You can learn more about Lynn's church and community at churchofthesojourners.org. If you'd like to support Red Letter Christians, head to redletterchristians.org. Their Gaza Peace Pilgrimage has already happened, but Red Letter Christians and the organizations that also organize the pilgrimage are still active in calls for a ceasefire. Lynn particularly recommends checking out and supporting Freedom Road. You can find out ways to do so at freedomroad.us. You can follow me on Instagram at maryb.safer so you don't miss updates and bonus content. Found Family is produced by Studio Aplomb. Sound engineering is by me, Mary B. Seyfert. Music is from pixabay.com. Found Family is a production of Mary B. Seyfert, LLC, all rights reserved. That's all for now. Catch you on the flippity-flop.